Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Younger Generation Leaders Network. This episode is part of a series of conversations with YGLN members on different aspects of the future of Euro-Atlantic relations with the new Biden administration. This time, we're joined by Roger Hilton, who will take a very close look at the new personnel in the White House and how much emphasis the new US administration will give to Euro-Atlantic security and what their engagement with NATO partners will look like. Besides the importance of addressing traditional military issues, we will also hear why new questions like climate security are moving up the agenda.
How Euro-Atlantic security will change with the Biden administration? Well, thank you, ELN, for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here. Recently, American Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, coined the term gumbo diplomacy. And I think it's very appropriate as we consider what Euro-Atlantic security will look like with the Biden administration if we also use an analogy. So allow me to introduce the term strapacki security policy. Strapacki is a wonderful Slovak dish that has many variations, but more importantly, it's made with some fundamentals. And I think that's very akin to how the Biden administration will be handling Euro-Atlantic security. So to begin with, on the executive level, the Biden administration has been unambiguous about its commitment to NATO and more importantly about Article 5, which I think is a great sigh of relief for all allied members. Dating back to when Senator Biden was in the Senate, he's been an outspoken supporter of the islands. And I think this will really be a shot in the arm for Euro-Atlantic security policy, which has been a bit slow moving during the Trump administration. Another side effect of the executive level of Biden taking a leadership role when it comes to this is it's going to reduce the public diplomacy pressure on Jens Stoltenberg, Secretary General of NATO, who has done an unbelievable job of keeping track of NATO exercises and responsibilities during the Trump administration. So this is welcome. On the cabinet level, a lot of the security policy coming out of the Biden administration will be executed by thematic experts with copious amounts of experience and who are truly committed to transatlantism. At state on the diplomatic level, Tony Blinken is a true Europhile and thankfully has a direct connection to CEE based on his family heritage, where his father was also the American ambassador to Hungary. Just recently, Secretary Blinken tweeted out congratulations on the V4, the Visegrad 4 on 30 years of partnership, which I think was also a legitimate sign endorsing their security, their role in encouraging security in Central and Eastern Europe. And even as recently in my backyard here in Slovakia, recently the US Embassy provided Slovakia with 245 ozone generators for elementary school, which is a great public relations move showing that everyone, the United States and NATO, is together trying to beat down this pandemic. So in general, on the diplomatic level, I think things are trending in the right direction when it comes to the Biden administration and the Euro-Atlantic security policy. Now, on the other side of the house with the Pentagon, you have Secretary Lloyd Austin, who is a seasoned Army veteran and importantly has served in Afghanistan, which means he understands the value of the alliance and what it means for advancing America's core security policies, both in Europe and abroad. Recently at the NATO Defense Ministerial, he struck all the right chords, and most importantly, he stressed the need to consult and engage with allies, which was something which was lacking during the Trump administration. Obviously, with all of the chaos going on with Afghanistan, this is a welcome development, and it looks as if the United States is back to really consulting with its allies. Now, one interesting issue to take here is compared to Secretary Blinken, who's going to be able to play the good cop with positive tweets and his direct connection to CEE, Secretary Austin might have to play the bad cop once in a while to ensure that defense spending patterns remain upward trending as much as they can, despite the economic shock of the pandemic. I think that despite the change in administration, things are going to go back more or less to normal, but it's important that the bean counters in the Pentagon are still going to be keeping a tight track on defense spending and that there should be no complacency and that Central and Eastern European members and across the alliance, including Canada, need to keep their foot on the gas when it comes to spending on military hardware and as well as raising the resiliency of alliance members. Now, one interesting angle that has really stood out for me is in addition to the normal bread and butter issues that come with transatlantic security issue, I am really hopeful that climate security will be further integrated into Euro-Atlantic security doctrine by the Biden administration through climate czar Sean Kerry. It's overwhelmingly clear that if we don't act, we being the West and NATO, on climate security now, there'll be security exposure and vulnerabilities down the line. So it's really a question of acting now and swiftness. And I really hope that this combination of Secretary Austin, Secretary Blinken, as well as climate czar Kerry will bring together this wonderful mix to advance the traditional issues as well as some of the new ones coming up, including emerging technologies. Finally, one issue that shouldn't be overlooked is that I don't think the Biden administration will take as such a confrontational view via the EU, who looked at it as a predator when it came to trade. These are professionals, and they know that they need the EU's help in lock and step when it comes to major NATO issues on things like military mobility to move forward. So I think relations between both Washington and Brussels at the Berlaymont will be a little bit more positive.
Now, we've heard about broader perspectives for Euro-Atlantic relations and where the Biden team stands on it. Going one step further, what will happen with relations between Moscow and Washington, and will we see increased US engagement in the Eastern Partnership region, where we've seen a number of conflicts and crises breaking out in 2020, adding to the existing fragility of this geographical area?
I think the best way to look at it is that the Biden administration is going to have to compartmentalize its interactions with the Kremlin. Obviously, the way the Trump administration handled the Kremlin was very unique, and I don't think we should expect the same way moving forward. When possible, it's been very clear through the Biden administration's public signaling that they are going to hold the Kremlin accountable. First, when it came to the SolarWinds hack, which is still ongoing, and the extent of the destruction is unknown. And more importantly now, human rights and political repression are again an issue in the United States, as just yesterday, they slapped sanctions on seven individuals in Russia. While not the oligarchs that was targeted by Navalny's party group, nonetheless sending a strong message that we're not going to hit you as hard as we can, but we're still going to hit you there. Now, when I talked about compartmentalization, while Russia is a bit of a miscreant and nefarious actor, they still need them for a lot of things moving forward. So I think, first off, the Biden administration's decision to extend the New START for 5 years adds a level of predictability to the relationships between Russia and the United States. And more importantly, it maybe opens the door a little bit to bringing in China into major arms control negotiations, either now or new ones into the future. And obviously, more importantly, if it was hard to ignore the burning of all of the forest going on in Siberia during the summer. So Russia, despite being a petrostate and heavily reliant on the export of gas and oil for its economic revenues, I think the Biden administration is going to want to engage Russia when it comes to climate security and how they can also contribute to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, retrofitting buildings, and also sort of deconflicting what's going to go on in the Arctic. Finally, comes to the Eastern Partnership. While in any normal state of affairs, I think the Biden administration would be heavily involved in it. But at the moment, I think there's too much at their plate to make it a priority. Obviously, there's still a standoff between Azerbaijan and Armenia, which has left a sour taste in both the mouths of many people in Armenia and the leaders in Yerevan, where there was the perceived coup with the fighter that's flying over Yerevan. Georgia is in the midst of a very, very difficult democratic transition now, where the head of the opposition was taken away, where Charles Michel of the EU actually led the negotiations. And when it comes to Ukraine and Belarus is still ongoing with protests, where there seems to be strong moral support, but not a lot of actions in terms of actually doing it. And then when it comes to Ukraine and Moldova, obviously Ukraine is still a massive ally of the United States, especially with Canada, with Operation Unifier. So I think they'll continue to do it. But unfortunately, due to what's on their plate right now, I think a lot of the Eastern Partnership issues are going to be deprioritized until they're able to get the pandemic settled at home and then focus down on the major bread and butter issues, as well as the climate security. The final issue that would be silly to be overlooking is how the sort of current vaccine diplomacy and vaccine wars are going. It's hard to ignore how poorly the EU has executed their vaccine development and rollout right now. So I think the Biden administration is going to have to keep a close eye on sort of the soft power effects of Russia delivering Sputnik V to conflict zones in Syria, all over Africa. And the same goes for China, who has allotted over $2 billion in charity for it, as well as $1 billion for Latin America in terms of credit to buy vaccines. So buckle up, everybody. It's going to be a busy 4 years ahead. And thanks so much again, ELN, for giving me the chance to share my thoughts.
Thanks for joining us. This was the East-West Coffee Shop brought to you by the Younger Generation Leaders Network. We hope you liked this episode. If you want to learn more about YGLN, have a look at our website, www.europeanleadershipnetwork.org, and also follow us on Twitter at YGLN Tweets.